Pavlovich, Kirk Monavalis, on behalf of Cross Appellate, Mal Appellate, and V. Chernetsky. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes if I could. May it please the Court, this case was filed in 2006. For more than 11 years now, my client has been denied the right to practice his religion according to his beliefs. For more than 11 years, the state of Nevada has made the same repeated arguments as to why that is. Specifically, according to the state of Nevada, it's the NDOC, the Department of Corrections, that is entitled to be the judge of what religion is legitimate enough to be recognized by that department. Moreover, it's the NDOC that is entitled to be the judge of what within that religion is a legitimate religious exercise. Second, the state argues that it should be granted far-ranging deference. That is, prison officials should be decided and should be able to subordinate religious practice to generalized needs to maintain order and security. These arguments fail. First,
well, can I ask which of the many issues that are still on the table are you trying to address right now?
The religious oils, Your Honor. So with respect to religious oils, the NDOC's policy and the policy that remains today violates the LUPA. It is a no-exceptions policy. And the state,
because there are so many moving parts, maybe you can help
get sure
oriented. This is the claim that they are saying is now moot and you're saying is not.
Well, they suggested in their recent motion for voluntary dismissal under Rule 42 that it may be moot.
Because the regulation has changed very much in the same way the regulation has changed on these other claims that you want to say are moot.
That's right. There's a slight difference, of course, because with the Sweat Lodge claim that the state was originally appealing, they lost, of course, in the petition.
I'm talking about that.
Right. And with the religious oils case, we were the cross appellant. So with respect to religious oils, it's two sides of the same coin with the Sweat Lodge practice. And that's to say,
the Sweat Lodge thing is completely off the table. You won on that. You have a judgment in your favor. They've thrown in the towel. Congratulations. So your client is going to get relief in some form or fashion on that claim. Whether you have to go back to the district court to enforce the order or not, that's up to you. But I'm trying to figure out, why are you resisting mootness as to this particular claim, the anointing oil claim, but you're not, or you're, maybe I've got it in reverse, but you're taking it into inconsistent positions with respect to
So the mootness question is different from the religious oils altogether. Originally, my client brought claims with respect to the state's denial of certain herbs, incenses, candles, and summary judgment in the district court. The district court granted summary judgment in favor of the state on that. However, in that case, my client did not actually challenge those practices because by the time summary judgment came around, the policy had already changed. So my client had before the court, not attempted to make his case as to why that previous policy was illegal under RLUIPA. The difference here is my client continues to be aggrieved by the religious oils policy. Sure. So the religious oils policy, as it was amended approximately a week ago, now permits religious oils to be used. However, on the ground, there's been no indication that my client will be able to use the oils he needs. But specifically, there's
I'm trying to pin down exactly what's still at issue. Is there a concern about the type of oil? And before it was specified as baby oil, and I understood the objection to that. Now it's non-flammable, non-toxic anointing oil. Is that a problem?
It is, Your Honor, and I'll tell you why. First of all, non-flammable, and there's no evidence before the court on this, but as best I can understand, nearly every, if not every, oil is flammable to some extent. Now, in terms of what the temperature is required to make a particular oil combustible, those change. I think they call it a flash point. But what it seems to do is provide an out for the state to say that the oils that my client needs and, in fact, requires for his religious practice are unacceptable. By the same token, there's a caveat under the new rules that say
any scented oils must be pre-approved by what's called the religious review team. Now, the religious review team is a panel of Nevada administrators, and it only meets quarterly. So, at a minimum, it's going to require pre-approval and thus a potentially three-month delay before my client can get approval for his scented oils. So
can I ask you this? It seems to me the claim that's originally framed and ruled upon by the district court is really not properly before us. That old regime that existed, which was baby oil only, and we're here to tell you that that's good enough for your religion, that's not in play anymore. So it sounds to me you were making an argument as to a brand new claim that would have to be relitigated in the district court.
I'm not sure that's right, Your Honor, because this isn't a facial challenge to the regulations. This claim, this case, was brought because my client was being denied the right to use the oil. So he wasn't saying that this policy, as written, violated RLUIPA. He was saying, I am actually being denied the right to use these oils.
But I'm saying the arguments you've just made about how this regulation might or might not be interpreted, we have no idea. I don't even know if the folks in the state do. So we're not in a position to issue a ruling on the legality of the application of this new regulation because that hasn't even occurred yet. As I remember, the merits of the claim that you cross-appealed on is just you can only use baby oil. And we're sorry, that's the only kind of oil we permit. So I guess we can look at that and say, well, why would we even talk whether that was legitimate or not when it's not no longer in existence?
Well, Your Honor, for one thing, it was changed a week ago after this case had been pending for 11 years and a week before oral argument. It has all the indicia of a move to avoid adjudication of the claim.
We supposedly agree with you. And we still puzzle as to what you want us to do now. But it seems to me that the most we can do is remand the case to the district court on that issue, which is really what you were asking for before anyway. But there's really not anything we can articulate that says this new policy passes muster or not, because we don't have any evidence about the new policy. Is there anything you want other than a remand or an opportunity to play out that issue with the district court?
Well, I don't think remand is the only possibility. I think that this case should reverse with instructions to grant summary judgment on our claims below, because I think that was
one claim. That's a claim that, the policy isn't there anymore. So you may be right. Maybe they changed the policy to snatch something from the jaws of defeat, but I don't think we have a live issue about that anymore.
Well, again, I don't agree because it was not a facial challenge. It was a challenge to the way my client's requests have been treated. So the court could easily reverse and say that is no longer acceptable and certainly provide guidance to both the court below and the NDOC as to what RLUIPA requires with respect to its policies, old and new. But at a minimum, yes, we request a remand so that the district court could decide whether the case is moved. We'd argue that it's not based on our understanding of the new policies, but at a minimum, that's what we'd like this court to do with respect to the anointing oils claim.
Okay, so just for the mootness, as to those other aspects of the claims that you cross appeal that you say were moved even before the district court ruled. You know what I'm talking about?
But yes, the herbs and insects and oils.
Exactly. So help me on this. I thought that in terms of the timing, we had the district court, and actually, of course, now I can blank on the dates. But we had the district court ruling maybe in March, let's say, but the effective date of these new regulations that you say render both those claims moot wasn't until September of that same year. So at the time the district court ruled, my understanding is that the policies that you were originally complaining of, yes, maybe they had been, you know, they were going to be changed as of September, but they were still in place. So why would the district court not have been permitted to go on the merits?
Yeah, and Your Honor, to the best of my recollection of the record, that's not true. I think that Mr. Chernetsky said that these claims were now moot in his opposition to the state's motion for summary judgment, and that's at docket 146 in the district court.
Okay, what's wrong factually about the date sequence of that case?
Well, obviously the policy had already changed by the time Mr. Chernetsky filed his opposition to the motion for summary judgment. And for that reason, he did not provide the court with support as to why the prior policy was illegal.
But just tell me, am I right in getting the dates? Did I recite the dates correctly? At the time the district court ruled in March, the policy was still in effect, but the effective date of the changes was not until September of that same year.
That's not my recollection of the time frame you're on.
Okay, but if that's true, then your mootness argument is wrong, right? Because the regulation at the time the district court ruled would still have been in place, and there would have been a lack of controversy at least for those 6 months until the effective date took.
Well, I think there's some support for the idea that when the claimant releases his claim to relief, when he informs the court that he's no longer aggrieved by the policy, whether the policy had been officially enacted or not, there's no longer a live case of controversy, so it should have been mooted rather than decided on the merits. So I disagree, or at least my recollection of the timing is different than Your Honor's, but even if that were the case, I know that Mr. Chernetsky made clear to the district court that he was no longer aggrieved and that he was no longer challenging the policy.
Just a reminder, I think at the start you said you wanted to hold 5 minutes for rebuttal. We're now down to much less.
3:35, Your Honor. Was this starting from 15 minutes or just the full time? Okay. If Your Honor has no further immediate questions, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Court, George Smith, on behalf of the state of Nevada. First, I'll address why the notes and oils claims move in light of the regulatory revisions, and I'll address the other three live issues that remain after the state's voluntary dismissal of its appeal. And those three issues are the work prescription days, the denial of motion for leave to amend, and then the dismissal of some claims on the merits rather than on mootness grounds. With respect to the anointing oils claim, that claim is moved now in light of the regulatory revisions, and as Your Honor's pointed out,
the oils he wants yet.
It's unclear if this new policy, as Your Honor pointed out.
But does he have, so the answer to that question is no. He is not satisfied with the state of affairs in terms of what access he has to oils.
I don't know if that's accurate, Your Honor. Below, Mr. Chessy didn't offer any alternative baby oils. His stance has always been, I just can't be limited to baby oil. So in the briefing below, he never suggested at least restrictive alternative, if you will.
I'm trying to make an easy question here. Okay. As far as you know, has Mr. Chernetsky said, okay, I'm satisfied, I'm getting what I want?
No, he has not.
Then how can we say the case is moot?
There's been a new policy that no longer limits him to baby oil.
But we don't know. I mean, I look at the policy. On some level, by definition, every oil is going to be flammable. You can stick it in an incinerator. So exactly how that gets interpreted, how limited it is, whether he's satisfied, I can't answer that question. And he brought a challenge, not as a facial challenge as such. He's saying, I'm not getting what I need to practice my religion. And we don't know, as we sit here, whether he's getting what he needs to practice his religion.
Well, we don't know whether under the new policy he's going to be unable to get what
he needs. Why does that mean his claim loses because, or his academic is smooth? He's brought his lawsuit. Maybe that means we go back to the district court and let the district court sort out whether he still has a grievance. But if we don't know he has a grievance or not, how can we say the case is moot?
The basis of his claim was that he was being, his religious liberty was being improperly burdened by being limited to baby oil.
His claim is that he wasn't getting what he wanted, or what he said he needed.
I think I disagree with Your Honor respectfully on that characterization of the claim. His claim was, this policy unduly limits me to baby oil. The didactic book of shadow specifically says, I cannot use baby oil. That limitation to baby oil is no longer in place under the new policy. So the basis of his claim that baby oil was against his religious beliefs is no longer in place. So I believe with the absence of that, the case has become moot. And it's unclear whether or not, even if it's unclear whether or not he can still get the specific oil he wants. And whatever the specific oil is, it's not clear from the record. He never suggested that. So whatever specific oil
he wouldn't have had reason to specify because he was working with the policy that the state had in place. The state changes its policy. It's a new state of affairs, but I'm not sure it's so clear that, okay, he ought to be satisfied now. We won't have a problem with this case anymore.
RLUIPA requires an as-applied case-by-case basis. And the inquiry is whether this particular inmate can be granted this particular accommodation, and if not, whether the denial of that accommodation is the least restrictive means of fairly compelling everyone's interest. Mr. Tanasky never specifically said, this is the accommodation I want. His argument was simply, just not baby oil. So it's not true to say that he, you know, he doesn't have to specify an accommodation and the blanket ban is enough. You know, I think of the Holt versus Hobbs case where there was a ban on the length of hair. The inmate there said, well, how about this lower amount? The court didn't say, well, you weren't required to suggest, you know, what you actually wanted. The overall ban was enough. So, Mr. Chernesky, there should be a factual determination whether under the new policy Mr. Chernesky is able to have access to the oils he claims that he needs. But his claims
are so how do we do that? I'm on that page, but we can't answer that question.
That's correct. This court cannot, so at most a remand. But I would say this claim is moot. I understand a long procedural history. This case probably counseled against just saying, file a new lawsuit if and when you're denied. I understand that. So at most a remand to the district court.
It sounds like we got an overlap here in terms of if we can't determine factually whether plaintiff is still aggrieved, we should remand to the district court and check out the current state of affairs. That's something that might not be the first choice of either side, but it sounds like both sides see a remand as being in the cards.
Perhaps it could be an option, but I do think these claims, which again were focused on the baby oil policy, are moot now, and that could be dismissed.
Counsel, it's Judge Gould, if I could interject. Can you explain to me why the timing is such that the policy is rescinded shortly before argument?
Sure, Your Honor. I understand the court may have concerns about the timing of this, but as the court knows from the parties' joint status reports that have been filed, and as opposing counsel well knows, the parties have been trying for a long time to settle this case. That's why oral argument was initially continued at one point. And it was the department and the state's hope that there could be a global resolution along with Mr. Chernesky, which would lead to regulatory revisions that all could be done sort of on a global basis. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. New regulations were issued in the middle of negotiations because, for a number of reasons during the course of settlement negotiations, but one of them being, if you issue regulations and the settlement ends up taking a different form, you might need to reissue the regulations. So that the characterization of these changes as sort of a last-ditch attempt to pull the rug off from under oral argument here is not accurate. These changes just take a long time. The parties have been working to settle both in the district court and before this court, and that's just, you know, when you're working on regulations, they take a long time, especially in the prison context, when you have to deal with security issues. So that's the reason why the changes have taken so long to be implemented.
Okay, thank you.
With regard to the first of the three live claims that remain, the work prescription days, again, as I mentioned, this is a case-by-case inquiry under RLUIPA. The statute says the imposition on that person. And here there's no evidence that Mr. Chernesky has ever asked for or was denied a work prescription day.
I thought we had actual documents that showed that he did put in a request and was told, no, you guys don't, it's the Wiccan religion. You all don't get that, sorry.
Those documents relate to another individual, Mr. Daniel Cook, who Mr. Chernesky refers to as a co-religionist or as a religionist. But there's no actual documentation from Mr. Chernesky himself. As stated in the declaration of Chaplain Calderon, which is at 796 of the record, he states that Mr. Chernesky's work days were Monday through Thursday, and the designated Wiccan celebration day was on Saturday. And according to Chaplain Calderon, Mr. Chernesky never requested a day off work Monday through Thursday to celebrate one of the Wiccan holidays. Mr. Chernesky responds, of course, well, the state only recognized certain holidays. There might be other holidays that fall on Monday through Thursday that we weren't able to celebrate. There's a process set out in the Religious Practice Manual in Sections 10 and 11, which allow Mr. Chernesky to kite or request the recognition of an additional holiday or an additional day off of work. And Chaplain Calderon's declaration backs that up as well, saying that if there was a day where Mr. Chernesky was scheduled to work but wanted to celebrate, he could have gone through a process to ask for that day off, and there's no evidence that he ever did so. So, again, this is a facial, sorry, this is an as-applied challenge.
You're right with regard to plaintiff, but there is the evidence with regard to Mr. Cook. Is there an explanation as to why his application was rejected?
No, not in this record. I don't know why Mr. Cook was or wasn't denied. But again, that's a case-by-case specific, inmate-specific inquiry. And so perhaps there were just compelling state interests that are reasonable, you know, that were least restrictive to justify denying Mr. Cook if he was in fact denied, that don't applied to Mr. Chernetsky. So I don't know the circumstances where Mr. Cook was or wasn't, but that doesn't say whether Mr. Chernetsky's religious liberties were actually substantially burdened unjustifiably.
Counsel, is there an exhaustion requirement? And on this issue of the days off, has the claim been exhausted in the prison system?
It doesn't appear so. Looking at Chaplain Calderon's declaration where Mr. Chernetsky never requested and was denied a day off, there's no backup documentation that Mr. Chernetsky then filed a grievance based upon being denied. So I do think there are exhaustion issues there as well, Your Honor. And now let's turn to the denial of Mr. Chernetsky's motion for leave to amend. On his first appeal, this court rightfully recognized that Mr. Chernetsky had abandoned his constitutional claims. The district court granted summary judgment on his 1983 claims, and Mr. Chernetsky never appealed those. Nonetheless, this court instructed the district court to consider, directed the district court to consider whether leave to amend should have been granted. And the court cited U.S. versus Webb with the parenthetical saying that a party is allowed to amend once as a matter of course before a party files a response to pleading. Then on remand, there was a 2-year period before the defendant's answer, during which Mr. Chernetsky didn't file an amended complaint and didn't file a motion for leave to amend. Once the defendants filed their answer, Mr. Chernetsky didn't file an amended pleading within the 15 days or 21 days filed by Rule 15. And in fact, Mr. Chernetsky actually missed the first day set in the scheduling order for motions for leave to amend. The magistrate set February 25th, 2013. As the deadline to file motions for leave to amend. It wasn't until March, a couple days after the deadline, where Mr. Chernetsky asked for that deadline to be extended. The basis for that request, set out in supplemental excerpts of record 26 and 27, indicated to the magistrate, I need to amend my sweat lodge claim. That's the only claim going to trial now. On the basis of that representation, the magistrate judge extended the deadline for motions to leave to amend. But when Mr. Chernetsky actually got around to filing his amended complaint, he added no allegations, but it didn't change the sweat lodge allegations. It renamed the individual defendants who had been granted qualified immunity back in 2007, and then repled a First Amendment retaliation claim and a claim for an Establishment Clause claim. The magistrate judge then, given the 2-year gap between when the case had been remanded and when Mr. Chernetsky finally asked for leave to amend, the magistrate determined that the 2-year delay was unduly burdensome and prejudicial to the defendants. It occurred on the eve of the dispositive motion deadline and only a couple months before the November trial setting at that point. The district court correctly relied upon this court's decision in Amerisource v. Bergeron, where this court said that just because a motion for leave to amend is filed within the time set by the scheduling order, that doesn't de facto render it timely, that the court still needs to consider the Rule 15 factors and whether there's been an undue delay. In the Amerisource case, that was a 15-month delay. Here, it was a 24-month delay. And in other cases, this court has upheld denials of leave to amend with an 8-month delay. So it was unduly prejudicial and unduly timely, especially for the individual defendants who now at this point were facing the prospect of monetary damages only months before trial. So the district court didn't abuse its discretion by denying leave to amend. So now I'll briefly touch upon, which kind of plays with the anointing oil case that we were talking earlier. Now I'll briefly discuss Mr. Chernetsky's arguments that some claims should have been dismissed as moot rather than on the merits. And I'm a little bit confused by the conclusion regarding the ceremonial fires. In the briefing below, it was actually the defendants who argued the ceremonial fires claim was moot, and Mr. Chernetsky, in his opposition, thanks to the defendant's motion for summary judgment, 355 of the record, he argued that that claim was not moot. Nonetheless, the magistrate.
I got confused through that section, so I may well have a less than perfect grip, but my sense was his concern wound up being, if that turns out to be a problem here, I don't want to be precluded from coming back to court. So if it's made clear that nothing here is preclusive to that ability, is there still an issue left with regard to the fires?
No, I believe that's right, Your Honor. If a ban were to be reinstated, or there was some later act now that substantially burdens his exercise of religion on, books, for example, or ceremonial fires or herbs and incest, those would be new discrete claims that would arise later on. I don't see how the dismissal earlier would preclude any claims based upon a new ban that would be reinstituted.
So you're not looking for us to say anything that would be preclusive, and if their concern is that just they don't want to have something that's preclusive and that satisfies it, maybe those issues, like most of the others, have been overtaken by events. The revision of the prison regulations.
I would agree with you, Your Honor, on that front. Mm-hmm. Unless the court has any other questions.
Yeah, let's do. So the ceremonial fires claim, you were saying that claim was moved at the time of the district court ruled.
And and I actually believe the magistrate dismissed it as moot. If you look at supplemental excerpts of record 44, I believe the magistrate actually dismissed the ceremonial fires claim as moot. It's less clear with the herbs and incense, and my memory of the record is similar to yours, Your Honor. But there was some timing delay between when motions were filed and certain regulations being reviewed by the Attorney General's office that weren't in place yet at the time of the motions being filed. But I don't have a specific recollection of, and in relation to, when those regulations went into effect after the briefing and then when the court ruled. But my memory, I do have a memory that's very similar to yours, but I don't have the exact dates nailed down. But the ceremonial fires claim was dismissed as moot by the magistrate judge.
Okay, we can verify that. But as to the other claims, though, my recollection, contrary to me, what you said, is that the district court did reach the merits and ruled against the plaintiff on all of those other claims. And his contention is that should never have happened, and that those rulings should be vacated, because of all of those claims were moot, or that the plaintiff himself had withdrawn those claims from the court's consideration. So what's your response to that?
If you look at Mr. Chesney's briefing below, and I recognize he was pro se, he didn't abandon his defense of any of those claims. Those claims were litigated. And as I mentioned, he did claim that some of those issues were not, in fact, was what his argument was. So I believe the district court, at least as far as the other issues, did rule on the merits of those claims. The only claim, according to the magistrate's decision, that they ruled on as moot was the ceremonial fires claim. But I do believe the magistrate did rule on the merits of the other claims.
And your position is what? That those claims were moot or they weren't?
They were not moot. The ones that the magistrate did rule on the merits, the magistrate properly granted summary judgment.
Because why were they not moot?
My memory of your is similar to yours on the timing issue.
Okay. Were the fires?
Except for the fires. The books, claims, herbs, and incense. I believe those were ruled on the merits properly given the timing.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. With respect to Judge Gould's question about exhaustion, I think that's a salient point because it's an affirmative defense, a lack of exhaustion under the PLRA, and the state did not raise that defense. So that is what I think is substantial evidence that the state understood that there was a denial with respect to work prescription days. And the record supports the idea that the state of Nevada, and that's mainly why we're here, the state of Nevada and the NDOC operated under a no exceptions policy. So what the state is arguing is
the record support the proposition that your client asked for time off that he didn't get?
I will concede, Your Honor, that there is no evidence in the record that my client asked for days off and didn't get it. However, there's sufficient evidence in the record that was the policy. It was the written policy.
This isn't a facial challenge. This is a specific challenge. And we don't have any evidence that your client was denied. I'm not sure what we're supposed to base.
Well, actually, in the complaint, which is SCOR 1012, my client, and if you read it favorably, and he wasn't acting pro se at that time, and he does appear to make a facial challenge with respect to the work prescription policy. With respect to the essential oils, I would disagree with the state's contention that he just said baby oil is no good. At page SCOR 1013, he says that the state has prohibited religious and or spiritual use of anointing oils. So he made a very specific claim that he wasn't being allowed to use the oils that he needed. And in fact, he said the same thing in his motion for summary judgment. So it wasn't just about baby oil, and Your Honor is absolutely correct that we can't know at this point whether the amended policy will allow him to get what he's been seeking for the past 14 years.
We may have a meeting ground here. Are these issues that need to be remanded to the district court in order to determine how the new regulations have impacted upon your client's claim?
Well, what would we like? Again, we would request that summary judgment be granted in our favor. And then as to the anointing oils. Because the state really made no effort to prove that it was compelling a government interest or that it was the least interest meets. And in fact, it's clear that it wasn't because of the new policy that's been instituted that the state.
asked this court to take judicial notice of. So it seems clear that my client should have been granted summary judgment on the anointing oil strikes, and that's what we would ask the court to do. Now,
how about the other issues that are left? I mean, are there other issues left, or do they all fall into the box of mootness?
Well, again, the board prescription claims have not been affected at all. There have been no changes to the policy on that front.
The fires, the books, and the herbs.
No, but we have, those are not active claims, and our only request is that the order on the merits with respect to those claims be vacated. And for the very reason that Your Honor identifies, we don't want a later change in policy, maybe under a new director of the MDOC, to come in, change things, and now we've got a preclusive order from the District of Nevada saying we're not entitled to those things. With that, it looks like I'm over time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you very much. The case just argued will be submitted, and we are adjourned. Thank you.